Cook and I cordially welcome you into my podcast, Musikleben. I have studied classical singing and voice, and I love to sing lots of contemporary and experimental music. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website. And you can also subscribe to my monthly newsletter, and then you will be informed about anything I'm doing. In this podcast, I talk about all the themes all around the contemporary music realm. I share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and I bring you the human beings out of this world closer to you. I'm cooperating with the NMZ. And in this episode, I'm cooperating with Rainy Days Festival Luxembourg, which is an amazing festival with contemporary music, curated by Catherine Kons, and this year's theme is bodies. And I will put the link for you into the show notes that you can look at the program. And if you want to go there, look at the tickets. They have a day pass or a festival pass for a very reasonable price. And in this interview, I'm talking to the viola player Beth McNinch, who's the founder of Musici Ireland, and we're going to talk about how she founded this ensemble, how they got started, and also about the project Musici Ireland is going to present and even premiere this year in Luxembourg. So this is the interview with Beth McNinch.
Hello, Beth McNinch. I cordially welcome you to into my podcast today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
And I'm so excited to talk with you later on about this great project you're doing at the Rainy Days Festival this year in November 25. But I would like to know more a little bit about you. And so I would like to know from you, how did you find your way into this new and experimental music?
Oh, okay. I'd say mine's not as experimental as others at Rainy Days, certainly. I'd say I'm kind of a late convert to sort of more contemporary music. I was very much sort of, I'm a viola player, and I was very much in the stream, you know, after music college, joining orchestras, going along with that sort of flow of things. And I moved to Ireland 18 years ago and started Musici Ireland in 2012, and gradually we just started wanting to sort of collaborate with composers and start commissioning our own works, and then as a soloist as well, I wanted to start trying to build up the viola repertoire a little bit, and especially support female composers. That was really important to me. So I'd say it's only really the last sort of maybe 6-7 years that I've started moving more into that area, and it's kind of gone in conjunction with I'm starting to do a lot more improvising, and I'm really enjoying that journey. And for me, improvising has been really tied to movement and, you know, sort of reacting with dancers and stuff like that, and I really enjoy working with dancers especially. I'm working a lot at the moment with improvisers. So I'm part of a research project that Dr. Sarah Rain is doing with UCD about, it's called Improvising Across Boundaries, and it's about female improvisers in Ireland across all areas of music. So that's been really interesting, and I'm meeting the most incredible improvisers. So that's making me think about sound and what I can achieve with the viola from a completely different angle, and I'm really enjoying that connection with them. I have to say, I think I've come from such a classical background, but it takes a while. You're so classically trained, you're so in this little box, to allow yourself to become more free and experimental. It's freeing, and it's sort of come for me at that sort of freeing point in a woman's life as well. So that's kind of a nice juxtaposition.
That's amazing. Yeah, I also come from the realm of classical music. I studied classical singing, very, very classical, even though I always had touch points with contemporary music. And I was always the braver one, because most of my student colleagues did not do it at all. And then I ended up doing all of it. I studied in the United States, and then they were always like, oh, there's this crazy German, she will sing it. And at first I also had no clue, but you know, with things you do more often, you get better. That was the
Exactly. Yeah.
journey.
No, I've been involved in a couple of really beautiful projects. A cello science Theostotir, I've probably not said that right. Sorry, Simon. Icelandic cellist who lives in America now. She ran an international improvising cohort, and I was part of that for a year, which was brilliant. It was we had to do most of it online because we were in different countries around the world, and then we came together in Iceland and spent 4 days together, and then performed like a 50-minute improvised piece together. And it was the most beautiful thing. Like it was, and that's what I like about the improvising community is there just seems to be these incredible opportunities to do sort of really free, sort of interesting work. And I think the people you meet doing it really, really interesting as well.
But I also feel, and I don't know how it is for you, that having this classical training, I have a very good foundation to do anything what I do with my voice. And at the same time, with the contemporary music or improvisation, I also do improvise. I discovered so many new things in my voice, which before I didn't think it would be possible. And for me, it also changed when I do sing classical repertory. I have the feeling I have more possibilities, or I also don't care so much if there is whatever a right interpretation. I just do it my way. And one example for that is also for me the Danish baritone, quite famous Bo Skaarup. He also does Wozzeck, but I heard him as Wozzeck, but I also heard him in as a Don Giovanni in Cologne. And he even jumped in. There was a different Don Giovanni. And the recitativo he did was the most exciting I ever heard because he colored it. And in a way, he used all the new music techniques in this recitativo. And so, how do you feel now going back and forth with this repertory?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly in the sort of the commissioned works that I'm involved in as well, it's given me sort of more of a feeling of ownership over what I'm doing. I think it makes you realize actually, I mean, this, you know, I love classical music. There's nothing against classical music at all, but you know, you very much are, you know, if you're in an orchestra, say, you're not doing your interpretation of it. You know, you're doing the conductor's interpretation of the music. So to be able to commission your own piece and work with the composer and do all that, I think it really allows you this freedom to be a bit looser with things, you know, and that's definitely made me feel a bit braver when it comes to interpreting any kind of music. And it's something that's really lovely about this new piece that we're playing, that we'll talk about surely, but Chronically Hopeful. Libby Crowd has written the score for it, but there are actually a couple of scenes that are improvised as well. So it's a really nice mix of some really gorgeous contemporary music, but with heavily improvised sort of some solo, some group sections, you know. So it's really interesting.
And yeah, we're gonna talk in a moment about this great piece you're doing, but I'm also curious because you're coming there with the Ensemble Musici Ireland. And what is this ensemble about, or how did you get together?
Yeah, so I actually formed it back in 2012, and I was actually on maternity leave after my first child and living in rural Ireland, and I hadn't been in the country that long, and it definitely felt like I didn't have any opportunities, and you know, it's very small network here, it's a very small world, and if you know, it can take a while to get involved in it. And I think I kind of just felt, you know, maybe I'm better off trying to set up my own work, and then I'm meeting people by employing them. And that's kind of a nice way of interacting with a new community, I suppose. And I was also really missing chamber music. I'd done a lot in London and hadn't had the opportunity at all once I'd moved to Ireland. So that's where it started off, was a chamber music collective, basically. And we went for many years performing in all sorts of variations, sometimes with singers, harpists, pianists, strings, you know, and anything that we wanted to do, because I wanted to explore the more unusual chamber works, you know, for unusual instrumentations. And then it was really I'd say it was during COVID. You know, I think the good thing, if any, about COVID was the space to think and to really evaluate what you're doing, you know, in your career and your life. And for me, I felt like I wanted to be doing more and to actually start doing work that was a kind of a reaction to the world around me. Certainly in Ireland at that point, there was a huge amount in the press about the mother and baby homes. I don't know if you're aware with the history of that. In Ireland, until shockingly, until 1996, any unmarried mother would be sent to the mother and baby homes. And for many years, especially in the sort of 30s, 40s, 50s, a lot of children were sort of illegally adopted to America and various other places around the world. Women were horrifically treated. You know, there's currently an exhumation going on in Tuam of hundreds of babies and toddlers' bodies that were found in a septic tank. You know, it's absolutely horrendous, shameful history, but it's really, it's very close history, you know. And the survivors of that are still around, they're still living, they're still, you know, only a bit older than me, you know. And I was reading all these stories coming out, and these mothers were having to fight to get their voices heard, you know, and it was really upsetting me. And partly because of my own experiences, you know, I suffered a huge amount of loss when I was on my journey to become a mum. And my own mum is adopted as well. So with those sort of connections to it, I just sort of more and more, I just couldn't let it go from my mind that I wanted to do something about it. And I actually reached out to a couple of historians and said, you know, I want to do an artistic project, but this is such a sensitive subject. How do I go about this? You know, it may put me in touch with other people. And any Irish people listening will know Catherine Corliss is an incredible local historian in Tuam who uncovered this whole scandal. And I had a wonderful talk with her and Maureen Johnson and Deirdre Wadding were able to put me in touch with women that would be open to me interviewing and recording them, their interviews. So that, because of COVID, took a little longer. But I started developing the idea originally. I talked to Irene Buckley. I don't know if you know composer Irene Buckley, and she was really keen to be involved. And originally, it was just going to be for string quartet with some recorded voice. And then I was like, I think, you know, could we do like a recorder, you know, a soundscape and stuff? And she said, well, that's more my sister's realm. So Linda Buckley, her sister, became involved as well, which was fantastic. And then, you know, when I went and interviewed these incredible women, and it was such an honor to be able to sit there and hear these stories. And for one woman in particular, you know, it was the first time she told anyone outside her family. So it was incredibly emotional, you know, and it was the weight of responsibility of that when you're starting a project like that, I think is huge, you know, and it's something that I'm really grateful that, it was the start of me really finding my tribe. You know, people taught this, but I think, you know, you start to, the right people start to gravitate around you and become involved in a project when they're supposed to. And I feel really, really fortunate for that. The piece ended up being string quartet live with recorded sections of testimony. We had an incredible animation done by Ava Bartolotto and Jack Cohen. And Bridget Nadoon created a really beautiful sort of artistic installation that the audience walked through to arrive to the performance. So it was a real audience experience of like the second they entered the door, they were in this world, the soundscape was going, you know. So it was the first time we'd done something really interdisciplinary. And it just felt so important. And the reaction we had in the world premiere of that in Cork and Triskell Arts Centre, who were incredible supporters of the project, I really have to shout them out. They were amazing. I mean, I've talked to several people about it since, and I don't think any of us as artists have ever experienced anything like it. We finished the piece and, you know, we got standing ovation, whatever. We walked off down the side And it just went, I mean, there were 200 people there, complete silence. They sat down and everyone just sat there in silence. And we were like, oh God, do they know it's finished? You know? And one lady stood up and she was like, my name is, you know, and I refuse to be silenced anymore. I was at best for a mother and baby home. And then another woman stood up, my name, sir, I'm not going to be silenced. This is just like, you know, and it was the most heartbreaking but incredible moment of connection that, you know, had been created through this performance. And for me, I think that it was just such an overwhelming experience of, you know, this is where art is so powerful. And it really changed my vision for Musici Island, because it was like, this is what I want to do. You know, this is, there are so many important stories to be told. And, you know, I might not be Irish from birth, but I definitely feel adopted Irish. And what are the Irish amazing at? They're amazing at storytelling, you know, and it feels like we've found our home now. And, you know, shortly after that premiere, I worked with my co-director, Ali Clark, who's a choreographer and dancer, and we actually made a dance film of a new piece that Libby Crode, again, the composer, had written for me for solo viola, and it's called The Suffragette Sonata. It's an absolutely gorgeous piece for solo viola. Go and check it out, everyone. You can see the dance film on YouTube, actually, on the Musici Island YouTube. And so that was all about the suffragette movement. And then we toured with Mother's Voice. You know, Catherine Kuntz amazingly brought us over to Rainy Days in 2023, and we did it there. And then we went on to in Frankfurt, in America, all around Ireland. You know, and it's really, I think what touched me was even in Luxembourg, you know, where people didn't know the story, people were coming up to us afterwards in tears saying, oh my God, you know, I had no idea, you know, where can I find out more? You know, and that's a wonderful thing, but you know, you're not just telling a story, you're kind of introducing people to important bits of history. And the interesting thing is as well, is the more places we've been to, the more people from those places have come up to me and said, oh, you realize that actually we had something like this. And it's shocking actually how across the world this sort of behavior towards women, you look at America at the moment and Poland, and you know, but it's happening, it's still happening, it's still a fight we need to fight. And I think if we're able to keep telling stories like this, it's really, really important.
Yeah, wow, that's an amazing, amazing start with such a big and project and this topic, and very, very touching. Wow. Yeah, this year you're doing a new project at the Rainy Days Festivals, and the Rainy Days Festival's theme this year is bodies. And you have, or you developed a piece called Chronically Hopeful. What is this about, or what can you tell us without spoiling anything, because people should just come and see it?
No, yeah, well, again, you know, when we were doing A Mother's Voice, I was chatting to Catherine and saying, oh, you know, we'd love to come back. And I told her, but we'd started the process of creating Chronically Hopeful. It was called Unseen at that point. And it was, but it was going to be about unseen disability and chronic illness. And she, I think she'd already come up with the idea of bodies, and she was like, oh, okay, we must talk, you know. So I'm really grateful to Rainy Days for co-commissioning this work. But yeah, as I say, the central theme of it is chronic illness and unseen disability, neurodivergency. And it's really been developed as a collaborative project with seven performers. Libby Crode is a composer, and Trudy Gorman is the poet, incredible poet. I'd say, you know, we have Eleanor Walsh is our actor, but she kind of, her character, as it were, is kind of an embodiment of this world, I suppose, because what Trudy's done is rather than a script, I'd say it's like a poetic monologue. Like it's really beautiful. And some of it is, oh, it's heartbreaking, you know, absolutely heartbreaking words. But then she finds such amazing, like, dark humor as well, because, you know, it's not all doom and gloom to have conditions and to live with these things. You know, you're still human. You still find, you know, it's still fine for humor in your situation. So I think she's done so brilliantly at showing that. But this is really, again, this is a step up from A Mother's Voice, where, like, as a quartet, you know, I mean, yes, we did a slight bit of choreography between us. This is really, you know, the string quartet is part of the action and part of the movement. And we have two incredible dancers, Ali Clark, I mentioned earlier, and Sapphire Hikari, who are really fantastic, and they've helped us stiff old classical musicians a lot moving around. And yeah, we've like A Mother's Voice, like, we started in research, I think, these projects to really make sure that they're authentic and that, you know, it's a real, authentic, true voice. We do like to do a fair bit of research beforehand. And luckily for us, we didn't have to go too far because, well, I think a good 5 out of 7 performers on this trip are living, and plus truly are all living with chronic illness or unseen disability. So there's a real lived experience, and that's why it was great to create it as a collaborative, because everyone brought different experience to the table. But the project really was born out of one of Musici Ireland's core players, Jane Hackett, is a wonderful violinist and incredible young woman. And oh gosh, when was it? Maybe 3 years ago now, she started having quite severe symptoms and, you know, was in and out of hospital a lot. No one seemed to know what was going on, you know, and a couple of years ago she was diagnosed with FND, which is functional neurological disorder. So FND can affect anyone, but symptoms vary from person to person. They can include like functional weakness and tremors, which impact movements. There can be sensory and cognitive issues, functional seizures, speech and swallowing difficulties. They can have problems of how the brain and body receive signals. So it can be a really, really debilitating, serious condition, you know. And as the director of an ensemble, it was quite shocking to see, first of all, like a really good friend going through this, but also like how do I still involve her in the group? You know, she's a wonderful violinist, you know, she should still be able to work. How do you do that? How do you, and it's about access, you know, everyone talks about access needs these days, but really, I mean, this is what we've done, is access, it has to be from the ground up, you know, it can't be something that's added on as a box ticking thing at the end, you know. And that's why this has been such a special project, because like I say, most of the people involved have access needs. So we've really had to make sure that every single day, everyone's needs are met. And that can be quite hard, you know, that can be quite challenging to create a work and still be rehearsing and still be performing with all these things that need to happen. So it's been an incredible journey for that. And we're definitely hoping to write a few reports on our findings of that, because I think it's a really interesting space to be in. And I'd also like to say a huge thank you to Eamon McPartland at FND Ireland, who has been so supportive, not only of Jane, but of this project, you know. And it's, I think it's really helped us. We did a work in progress back in May in Ireland, and we actually had 90 people come to it, which is incredible for a work in progress. And so many of the people that came had various chronic illnesses, and the feedback we got, you know, it was just like, we're finally seen. And I think, again, it's like A Mother's Voice. It's so important that you're showing reality and showing real life situations and real life stories that are happening.
I'm very fascinated. And I'm also a big fan that you do projects that really come from the inside and not just, I mean, you probably have the same game in Ireland than we have here, where you, whatever, write those applications that you get money somewhere. And sometimes there are some fashions, let's say, and I don't believe that you should follow a fashion. I mean, if that's just what you're on and it matches, lucky you. You get a lot of money, but I don't believe to pretend something or to make it adjustable. And that's also, I criticize sometimes in this application process, because this is not working for everyone. And I was thinking of many things when I was listening to you, or when I prepared for today, because I mean, what is a chronic illness? I mean, is it also something like allergies? I mean, I have allergies, and that's not always fun being a singer. Or I also know I'm lucky with that, but I know some singers actually, which is fascinating, whatever, have lung or breathing problems, and they still do singing. And also, a very famous example was Joan Sutherland, a very famous Australian soprano. She had like sinus problems her whole life, and she still sang because she really wanted to sing, even though sometimes, I think, even in performances, her head was like exploding from pain. So it's very fascinating. And I also find it fascinating, even if people have something, that the body still can do so much. I mean, the body is in a way so incredible. And the other thing I was thinking about is this with the unseen. Like, I mean, we talked about the story in Ireland, and when I also think of the wars we had in Europe. And you know, when a man came back and whatever had lost his arm, everybody was understanding, supportive, and it was okay that he was whatever sad that he lost his arm. But about everything that happened to all those people emotionally, they didn't talk. They just suppressed it somewhere or whatever,
The
got into alcohol
PTSD and
or some
trauma,
other things. And that I also found so weird in a way, because like the emotional hurt or abuse, or when people like get emotionally abused, also nowadays, people cannot get it. But if you get like physically abused, then people are, oh yeah, poor girl. But the other one, if you haven't experienced it, people just go over it, like, oh, don't make a fuss about it. And so I also found that so fascinating. You know, if you have something physically visible, people are more understanding. And if it's not visible, or if it's just emotional, then some people are just, get your crap together.
It's a real issue, and it's something we've talked about a lot within the project, but I think a chronic illness, I mean, it's or unseen disability, neurodivergency, it's all kind of the same thing. It's all this unseen element to it, and like you say, it's if you're walking along with a cut your arm in a cast, you're gonna, oh no, what happened? But if you're going through sort of, I don't know, a bipolar episode or something like that, you don't get that kind of understanding and support, and that is wrong, and it's something, I suppose, not to be too grandiose about it, but I mean, it's why we want to create this work, because not only are we talking to people like us that are suffering from things, but we're spreading awareness about the fact that a lot of people, I mean, I couldn't believe it when we sat around the first table sort of discussion about this, and literally everyone around this table, there must have been like 10 people, were going, well, actually, I've got this. But and these are people I've known for nearly a decade. And I was like, what? I had no idea. Because a lot of, and especially women, don't talk about it, and it's just something that you put up with, like endometriosis. Oh, it's sure, it's just a woman's problem, It's debilitating, the pain someone's in with endometriosis. I mean, it's crazy. And it's been interesting, actually. There's been a lot of research into that and CFSME, chronic fatigue syndrome, in the last couple of months. There's actually been a lot of new research papers coming out. So it's great to see that, there is more being put into it. But I mean, I have chronic fatigue syndrome myself. I a couple of weeks ago was at a doctor's appointment, and I actually started laughing because I was in the middle of one of the scenes of this show that we're putting on, and it was exactly the scene. And I was like, I can't believe I'm actually experiencing this. And I actually told my doctor, and I said, you are saying all the things that is in the script of this production I'm putting on. And they were really shocked. But I think that's good. It's like, start listening. We know our bodies. Trust, trust that when we say there's something not right, there's something not right. And that is a huge, huge issue, and especially for women, I think it's a massive issue, and not being believed. So yeah, I mean, that's a huge,
It's
huge part of
great
it.
to bring things out into the open, because then it also loses all the the shame, because things
Exactly.
also get worse because we try to cover it so
Yeah.
hard, and that takes a lot of energy. I mean, we're both lucky that we're both performing this year at the Rainy Days Festival in Luxembourg. What do you appreciate a lot about this festival, or do you think anything is special about this festival?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's the camaraderie, like between the different groups and stuff. I really enjoyed that. But there was such a lovely atmosphere sort of backstage, you know, where you'd meet artists from all around Europe and be able to talk about work, and everyone was doing such different styles of music and different styles of performance, and that was really fascinating. I think, you know, I mean, Catherine's really curated and incredible festival. Kudos to her. It's a huge amount of work. And the Philharmonie and all the staff there are just, I mean, they're so amazing. They're so welcoming and supportive. You know, that's not always the way when you go to festivals, you know. And especially because we're quite a large cohort. And we're actually heading over on Monday. We're spending the whole week there rehearsing and being as involved as we can be with everything, which is really exciting. It's great. Yeah, and actually on that note, I do also want to say we are really lucky in Ireland because we have something called Culture Ireland, who, if you apply for funding, can help support for travel and accommodation and stuff. And that really helps us be able to go to festivals like this because, you know, if you're taking like, I mean, with our crew and everyone, you know, with bringing over like 11 people for mine, that's a huge amount of people if you're talking about traveling with instruments and set and all of that, you know. So to be able to take the weight off a festival makes it more likely that as a group we're going to be asked to come and perform, you know. So I think things like that, I don't know if you have something similar there, but I think it's really important to have those kind of supports, you know. And it, and again, it's not talked about that often, but you know, I'm very grateful for that because it's very difficult, isn't it, in the arts to get any kind of funding. But you know, if you're offered a performance opportunity at a festival like this, you know, you want to be able to say yes, and it's great to have an organisation like that that can, if you're lucky, can allow it to happen.
That's wonderful. Now I'm also curious, with all the things you're doing, how do you get it done? Do you have any time management, or are you structured? Are you more flowy person, or how do you do all this?
Yeah, my friends are always like, what are you doing? I'm actually also doing a master's in research at the moment at UCC. And so, yeah, it's an awful lot. There's a lot going on. How do we do it? I don't know. You just get on with it. I think best. I mean, I am fairly organised in that I am a big list maker. I have to have like, and my different tabs of like, this is college work, this is Musici Ireland work. You know, I'm also the artistic director of Music for Wexford, who put on 15 concerts a year. So I'm kind of doing Catherine's job, but for that, you know, curating and finding ensembles and inviting them to Ireland. I'm in my last year of that now, so that's been great experience. What else am I doing? Yeah, I'm doing that improvising across boundaries stuff. doing solo work as well. You know, we had our debut album was released in January this year, Earthrise, and that's, if anyone wants to check that out, it's all contemporary Irish chamber music. So it's really beautiful stuff. Actually, I mentioned Linda Buckley earlier. She's on there. Ian Wilson, I'm going to forget everyone's names now. Deirdre McKay, Deirdre Gribbin, and Liam Bates. He's a really good friend of mine and a fantastic composer. And I commissioned him to write a viola concerto for viola and chamber ensemble. So that's on that piece as well. So I've been working with him at the moment on the piano reduction score and all of that. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but it's great. But I think what I find quite tricky as artistic director is, you know, obviously I'm also directing this performance next week. So there's a huge amount of work. I'm performing in it, so I'm having to memorize like a 60-minute show, do all of that, plus you know, for unfortunately for this, we didn't have the money. So I'm also a production manager. So I've booked like 12 flights and 12 hotels. You know, so it's such a huge amount of work. And I think people don't often see that side of it when, you know, you see an ensemble go and someone's had to organise that. And often it is the artists themselves. You know, it is a huge amount of work. I'm also working on our next year's programme, you know, which hopefully will include a run of Chronically Hopeful here in Ireland. And we're going to be touring the Arvo Pärt Stabat Mater, you know, beautiful, beautiful piece. And we've
actually...
I know
that one. I've sung it a few times,
actually. Oh, it's gorgeous, isn't it? Oh, it's stunning. And I've actually commissioned, do you know Deborah Pritchard, composer? Commissioned her to do like a modern Stabat Mater, which reflects on mothers in war, basically, which feels very relevant at the moment. So we'll be performing that around Ireland next year as well. And then also, you know, we're also planning our big Arts Council application for grant funding for 2027. So it's like all of these levels that you're constantly, constantly working on. And it is a lot, you know, and I do find it quite overwhelming sometimes. And especially with chronic fatigue, it can be difficult to manage my own energy levels. You know, my husband's always saying, you know, yeah, you're really good at access needs, but you need them as well. And I always kind of forget that.
So when you do practicing, do you have like fixed times for the?
Oh no, it's like
you can do it anytime. Okay,
yeah.
Because I'm a person who tries to sing like the first thing in the morning because then I have my head free for anything else.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And can you like switch between those things, or you rather say, okay, this is the day for, I don't know, doing this new project, or this is the day for I don't know, curating your festival?
I'm afraid I've got ADHD brain, so I have like 20 tabs open in my brain at all times, so I will flip literally between emailing about Music for Wexford to writing an arts grant proposal for Music Tree Ireland to, oh, I've got 20 minutes to learn to memorize that section of the piece, you know. And then because I've got two boys as well, so you know, and my husband's a lighting designer, so he's actually designing the show, which is really lovely. We'll get to see each other, but I haven't seen him for 3 months. He's been away, so like
exciting that you can flip back and forth so fast.
Yeah, it's good, but like it does create an element of burnout every day. So it's tough to manage that, you know. And but like I, you know, I'm lucky that where I am, you know, I really have a really good home office / studio that I can really be, you know, I often have my viola out behind me. So, you know, I can be working on the computer, just turn around, pick it up. Okay, I'm going to play. Or, you know, if I'm finding some written work particularly challenging, it's nice then just to be able to go, oh, do you know what? I'm going to just play. Because it always makes you feel better, doesn't it? When you can just actually do your art form rather than write applications and do all of that, it's lovely.
And anything else to balance it out? I mean, are you also enjoying the nature in Ireland? Or
yeah, no, walks? I mean, we're really, really lucky where I live. Like we have views of mountains out the back, mm-hmm. and then I can walk to the beach in 10 minutes. And you know,
awesome. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm really, really lucky with that. And like I also just for myself for fun, I joined this a really fun improv group in once a week in town, which is so lovely just to go and do some comedy and, you know, put yourself out there a bit. And it's really nice to do something that's just for yourself. I think sometimes that can get a little lost, but yeah.
Well, I thank you so much for talking to me, and yeah, I hope people come to your show. And
me too.
I have one last question for you that I always like to ask. Is there any tip you would like to give to young artists?
Oh, that's a good one. I think be authentic. I think find what matters to you. Don't try and fit in someone else's box. You know, I think if you try and follow a path that feels true to you, you will be happy and you'll do well.
Thank you so much, Beth. And I wish you the best for your show. And I hope I see you someday.
Oh yeah, well you too. Good luck with it. And I'm sure we'll bump into each other at the Philharmonie.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irina.